Very much, Eric. I'm Susan Saunders. It's Throwback Thursday, and I have a very special guest here today in studio that you know very well from Jack Lewis Fine Jewelry and your marvelous storytelling commercials that you do, John Carter. Happy to have you in here. And before we talk about your upcoming trip to Antwerp, I just want to again say thank you to your business for being, I think, maybe the longest running advertiser in the 90 years of WJBC.
It's us and Clay Dooley, yeah.
Because Jack Lewis is how many years old?
We were founded in 1927.
So that's 88 compared to our 90.
Yeah, I
think a man by the name of Jack Lewis knew somebody at JBC pretty early on and said, I want to tell people. I didn't realize you actually worked for the Jack Lewis.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I started when I was a junior in high school at Central Catholic. And
what'd you do for him?
You know, I had a counselor came up to me. We still hire high school kids this day the same way. She came up to me and said, Carter, do you have a job? And I said, yeah, I'm not real crazy about it. She said, okay, how would you like to do mail at a jewelry store? And I said, okay. So I came in and I was doing, the first day I was doing mail and taking out the trash and the typical thing you would do as a high school kid. And when I was done with those duties, after a couple hours, they gave me a set of keys and said, okay, now wait on people.
Really?
Yeah, I was selling, you know, nice watches and diamonds and everything right away. So it was... I hadn't expected that, and
sure.
So that became my duties for really through much of college, because I went to Illinois State afterwards, and you know, I'd come in and get those basic duties done, and then I got sales experience, so great.
And was there ever a gap, or have you always worked for Jack Lewis?
Once I graduated from ISU with a marketing degree, I went to work for one of our watch companies, a Swiss company named Maurice Lacroix.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah, because when Mr. Woolworn used to come in and talk about the watches, you were usually tagging along with.
Yeah.
That's when I first met you.
I was the watch manager at that point in college. And so that my time on the road, I was 23 years old, and I had a territory of 13 states. Too young to rent a car, and so I drove everywhere, met, you know, hundreds of jewelers and saw how they ran their businesses, saw who did it right and who did it wrong. It was really, I always say to this day, it was kind of my education in the business, because, you know, I was, of course, used to the Jack Lewis way, not that, you know, hasn't needed tweaking along the way, every business does, but made a lot of friends and really got a lot of, I probably had the longest list of mentors of anybody I know, just from that experience and then through just people who were kind enough to take me under their wing. So
with all of this experience, you do things differently in the jewelry world than anybody else, and that's why I wanted to have you in today, because I've heard on your commercials year after year, I'm going to Antwerp, we're going to Antwerp, and I'm like, do you need to go to Antwerp, and where is Antwerp, was the question I asked Siri this morning, and I got a nice little map,
right. But
how do you explain it to people?
People, the funny thing, the joke in our store is people, they remember that you go someplace in Europe, but they sometimes think it's Amsterdam. totally different.
Not the red light district. No, we're going to the diamond district.
Yeah, yeah. So we go to Antwerp. Belgium is considered to be the diamond capital of the world. And for the reason, and diamonds aren't mined there, but they say that about 80% of the world's diamonds at some point travel through Belgium. It's kind of like the... center for trading and for cutting in the whole world.
And so, that's an art into itself, is the cutting of a diamond.
It is. And a lot of times, I've been in offices before. One time I was there and they opened a parcel that was the size of, say, a notebook or something like that. You know, and they flipped it open and it was 2 or 3,000 carats worth of uncut diamonds. And, you know, as a retailer, we just see them in their beautiful, you know, finished form. And that was,
but these were raw,
you know, like I totally gem geeked it out right there. It was, you know, I looked at this and I was like, oh, you know, and everybody in the room, we were just, because we don't see that. It was so cool. And so that was kind of my appreciation for, oh, okay, this is why my Antwerp and Belgium in general, because even Brussels has a diamond, and actually Amsterdam too is not too far away, and it actually has a diamond district as well. But Antwerp is considered to be the source. So we go there because, as you can imagine, so if a diamond originates there, right, so it's cut there or it's traded there, it makes a trip there. By going there and buying from some of those wholesalers, you're I hate to use the cliche thing, eliminate the middleman, but you're actually eliminating 2 or 3 middlemen, because a lot of times a diamond will be cut, then bought by a wholesaler, then sold to another wholesaler, then sold to somebody in New York, and then sold to a jeweler in Illinois.
I don't know if it's a security risk for me to ask you how many diamonds you end up traveling back home with.
Yeah, zero. Yeah, it's all done by Brinks or FedEx. You know, it's the same way for just that reason. You wouldn't want to... it's actually enough of a security risk just to be walking around that street there. There's men with machine guns and checkpoints, and you leave your passport at the front door when you walk into some of the diamond bourses there. And they give you a little key card, and you have to remember to get your passport as you leave. And yeah, you don't dare lose that key card, or you're not leaving the country.
So you go every year now, and you get diamonds. How many do you need for Jack Lewis in a year?
Yeah, it just depends. I mean, sometimes I'll go there with what we call pre-sales, where people will hear that we're going, and they'll say, hey, this is a pretty good time. We've got an anniversary coming up, or I'm looking to get engaged. Can you bring me back a 1-carat or whatever they want? And I'll search from over there. And it's nice in today's world, when you and I first started talking about this years ago, I would have to call people and time it. And nowadays I can just send somebody a text. I have pretty good technology with me. I can take pictures of the diamond. I just have to have that one initial conversation with somebody in the store where we're talking the same language. If I call you and say, I found a 1-carat GVS2, that can't sound like Greek to you. You have to know what I mean.
Well, that's a cut color and clarity, right?
Yes, cut color and clarity, right.
And so when people ask for a specific kind of diamond, are they thinking a specific kind based on how much they can afford versus the size?
Yeah, usually. And I think that we're pretty good at Jack Lewis. When somebody walks in the door, everybody starts the process thinking, hey, I can spend X number of dollars, whatever that is. We're pretty good about asking the right questions and helping that person get at their budget or just below it. If somebody's going to spend a little bit higher than what they originally intended, we make sure that there's a pretty good reason for it. You know, maybe they're getting a slightly bigger diamond or the color and clarity, which we could have a whole show on that, I think is sometimes overrated, because it's all the way what everybody notices about a diamond is how everybody likes, right? They want a diamond as big as possible and as sparkly as possible. To break it down into the simplest terms. And that has almost nothing to do with color and clarity. It's all the way that the diamond is cut. And that's what I'm looking for there mostly.
Has the sparkle cut improved over the years with technology?
Yeah. It's funny because there was a man about 100 years ago named Tolkowski, and he laid out the standards for just using sheer mathematics. He said that a diamond should have these percentages, for the table and the depth, and all this makes more sense maybe with the chart. And what's funny is 100 and... some years later, now that they have computer programs and ray tracing abilities where they can actually trace the ray of light from where it enters the diamond to where it leaves, they found out that Tolkowski was within a couple of percentage points of being correct in almost every direction. And so, yeah, I have this little device that I bring with me from the American Gem Society called the Asset Device. And we use it both to buy diamonds and to sell diamonds, because I can go through a parcel of 100 diamonds and doing 10 diamonds at a time. Let's say this diamond, this parcel is $5,000 per carat, and I'm going through 100 diamonds at a time. Well, I can pull out just the best ones from that parcel. They're the same price. Mm-hmm. I might as well get the best ones, right?
Right.
And rather than use my naked eye, it's just real quick. I can identify the proper cut diamonds and take it back, and it's a really simple device to show our clients, hey, this is why I chose these. And, if I bought them over here, sometimes they'd be thousands of dollars more expensive. Not always, but there can really be a significant savings to going to Antwerp. Yeah.
And how long before you're leaving, John Carter?
We leave on Wednesday, and the trip has taken on a whole new dynamic because my wife goes with me now. So,
How many free samples does she expect to take back?
Security's pretty tight, so they keep an eye on her. She's a shady redhead, so.
Obviously, you have a markup because you have to pay for your brick and mortar store, and you have to be able to then also sell people fittings, facets, where there's going to go in a necklace or setting for your ring, all of those things. But, I mean, just out of curiosity, what if I went to Antwerp and bought a diamond, could I possibly buy, price range for a 1-carat?
No, you really can't. I mean, unless you bought from a retailer on the street, in which case you're in the same scenario that you would be here, right? The bourses of the diamond district would really only be open to, the only reason I'm able to go is because I'll go with, say, 10 or 15 other jewelers. For the most part, those people in those offices, they're used to writing million, $2 million orders, because they're, somebody will come in as a big wholesaler from New York and they'll just buy, everything they have in a particular range. We're going in there 10, 15 stores at a time. We're able to cherry pick it, get a little better deal. I'm sure the guy's spending $1 million at a time, get a little better deal. Everything is all about volume, right? But we're going through there and buying really as a group collectively a big amount. So it definitely is an advantage. We do it. I don't just do it to have another trip to do. I travel enough. And don't get me wrong, Europe is a fantastic place to go, and Belgium really is a very cool country. And we do enjoy it. It is a fun part of my job. But if I could get, I've kind of honed that skill to narrowing it down to a particular group of diamonds that I can't get here. And I know this because I'll show what I get when I get back to some of my wholesalers here, and they'll say, why didn't you buy more? You know, you can't find that here. And for a client now to kind of piggyback, I go there and buy diamonds just for our basic stock now anyway. And so if somebody says, our customers can just say, oh, I'll just see what you get when you come back. Great, because I'm going to come back with quite a bit. Or they can say, find me a specific thing.
The price range of a 1-carat diamond retail is anywhere from what to what?
It depends. You know, everything depends on quality. So it's a huge range. It can be, you know, I've sold 1 carats for $3,500, and I've sold 1 carats for $12,000 to $15,000.
And I'm not talking about the blue or the yellow or anything.
Right.
You know, something that's of a
those decent can be hundreds
quality.
Of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, so. and that's a pretty big size stone for 1 carat.
For sure. For a fancy color.
Just kind of curious, but I've always wanted to ask, since I'll go on Caribbean cruises, mm-hmm. or go visit down south of the border, everybody's always trying to sell you jewelry when
right.
you get into the Virgin Islands and in that area, and they're like, oh, things you can't get in the United States, and I'm like, well, I don't know. You haven't met my friend Sean Carter.
Carter can get anything.
Now, granted, I may not have to pay taxes on it here,
sure. yeah.
but they're usually trying to sell you a stone that they get from those areas. And after this short break, that's what I want to tell you, I want to ask if you've ever gone digging for your own diamonds.
Ooh.
Because, you know, there's a place to do that in the United States.
I've heard, yeah.
And we're going to find out more with John Carter of Jack Lewis Jewelry right after this on WJBC. 9:25. I'm in studio with my friend John Carter from Jack Lewis Jewelers. You keep changing
you'll
the name on me. I always pause and I'm like,
you'll get it.
Not fine jewelry anymore. It's not jewelry.
Yeah.
Jewelers.
Yes.
And that's where you'll find
simpler,
the website.
It's shorter.
Speaking of websites, you have the cutest blog in the whole wide world.
Thank you.
And I love to hear you tell stories, whether it be on stage or on your commercials or just in person. And so I'm linking the Easter pumpkin and the shoebox story, which I'm not going to ask you to retell because you've perfected it in the written form. And it's just one of those things that you will enjoy if you follow Jack Lewis Jewelers on Facebook, is stories from John Carter that will warm your heart.
Oh, thank
now,
you.
Since I have the opportunity to ask for those stories in person today, I have to ask, have you yourself ever gone digging for diamonds in Arkansas? This has been on my bucket list forever. And the last time I tried to go do it, there was a hurricane down in New Orleans area, and it was 9 days of rain, and I couldn't go.
I never have, but I have friends who have stores down there, and actually the diamond right now that's being, the 8-carat that mm-hmm. they just found, I have two really good friends. It's being cut at a retailer in Little Rock,
ooh.
Who's a really good friend of mine, actually, Laura Stanley.
Okay.
Stanley, the gemologist, is the name of their store down there. And a Canadian diamond cutter named Embry I'm not sure which part of Canada, but they're kind of keeping you Esperanza. They're naming the diamond, and they're making, I think, like a 6-carat Briolette diamond, which is a really different shape, but it had to do with the shape of the rough. They couldn't really do too much else with
it.
Yeah,
I know. If you have 8-carat raw, it could be trimmed down to as much as a 4-carat finish.
Oh,
or less.
And this is like really long and skinny, so they had to cut a really long and skinny diamond, like a marquee or mm-hmm. something like that. And it's all about weight retention when you're cutting diamonds. And so they I'm sure they went that route, and it's gonna be a super unique, one of a kind thing. But that is the largest diamond ever found in the United States. We're not known for our diamonds here.
Yeah, another reason that I really want to go to Arkansas, because it seems like every time I try and make that trip and it doesn't happen, then somebody finds some ridiculously, obscenely large diamond. And
could have been
and they're
you.
Like, yeah, it was on the sidewalk over by the porta potty. And I'm like, ah, it could have been me. And I've still never understood how, before we had laser technology and the mathematics that you were talking about earlier involved in learning how to cut diamonds, how anybody ever cut the hardest substance on earth. What tools were they using back in the day?
Well, a lot of times I have clients that are surprised. They'll get it. They'll have a diamond that's been in their family, say, for 50 years,
mm-hmm.
75 years, and they'll bring it to us to be repaired. And a lot of times we'll know, it's not uncommon for a diamond that's that age, is we'll have to say, it has some chips in the girdle, which is the ring around the outside of the stone. And they'll say, well, diamonds can't chip.
Mm-hmm.
And my response to that always is, if diamonds couldn't chip or break, then they couldn't be cut. And so what they have to do is they're basically cutting a diamond along the molecular grain, the way that the molecules, the way the stone grew. They have to cleave the diamond, which is a very precise thing, where they find that grain and they smack it, and it literally cuts the diamond into two. What most people don't realize is out of one piece of rough diamond, mm-hmm. they usually will get two diamonds. That's it. They think the perception is that they're just whittling it away and they're using all this waste. They're not. They're grinding it away, and that powder that they're getting is only good for grinding other diamonds.
But they're using diamond powder to help grind other diamonds for the buffing and polishing to try and get it down to the smooth thing.
One of the things, and actually I know much of this through my trips to Antwerp. I see this done quite a bit over there.
And that's why we were having you in today, was talk about your upcoming trip to Antwerp. So you're leaving next Wednesday.
Yes.
You'll be in Belgium for how long?
About 4 days we're actually in Belgium to do the diamond buying part of the trip, which it seems like a long time. It's not. I mean, it's 8 to 10 hours a day. Your eyeballs are exhausted after that. It's not the same thing as manual labor. I'm not saying that, but it is an exhausting process to try to find just the right thing, especially when you're looking for specific people.
And when you're there, you've got to have at least, though, something to look forward to in Antwerp besides the diamond buy. Is there a restaurant, a pub? What's fun to do in Belgium, John Carter?
It becomes kind of like, because we go there one to two times a year mm-hmm. for, you know, the last 10 years or so, you get your local hangouts. There's a place. I am an odd bird in the fact that I really enjoy anchovies on my pizza.
Ew.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd like that.
I thought we were going to be friends over crispy bacon, and now you're bringing anchovies.
We are crispy bacon friends.
Okay.
My favorite, there's this little pizza place over there that has the best sausage, bacon, and anchovy pizza I've ever had in my entire life. It's amazing.
Okay, you had me until the anchovies.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to order the anchovies. I mean, if you don't want to
be
brave.
Do they have gluten-free crust?
Sure.
Okay.
You know, so you have to ask for it.
But
and they don't like
it.
They don't like it. They know you're an American when you ask for that. But yes.
But the Europeans have gotten, apparently you can go through like Italy and get a lot of gluten-free pasta.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I ask for it. I'm not gluten-free strictly like that, but I do ask for these things.
Yeah.
And there is this place, like I said, the trip has taken a different dynamic since my wife has started to go along. We found this place. One of the things Belgium is known for is mussels. It's, you know, getting fresh mussels. Brussels, you get mussels in Brussels. That's the thing, which is an hour away from Antwerp. And there's a restaurant named Musselman's that we love in Antwerp, and that's where we go. Oh, Appleman's. Musselman's a different place. But Appleman's has the best mussels I've ever had in my entire life.
And I'm assuming you're speaking English yourself. I don't think you know...
I don't know Flemish yet.
No. But are you getting through okay, or do you have to use the
Belgians speak. They literally, almost every Belgian I know speaks about six languages. They speak French and German and Italian and Flemish and English, and they flip from one to another as quickly as you and I do websites on our
So if I ever want to tag along and I'm going to go shopping while you're picking out diamonds and hanging out, we could actually make it through without me having to use my iPhone and say, Siri, how do I find the body in Flemish?
You don't have to switch from English at all.
All right.
You
know? How do you say bathroom in Flemish? You had to have learned that one.
I don't know. So it sounds like that.
All right. If you still have last-minute orders for diamond requests before you go to Antwerp, can they come see you at Jack Lewis?
They can. And, if email is easiest for people, they can always email me directly at jcarter@jacklewisjewelers.com or call the store at 663-0538. I pretty much live there between now and then, so I'd be happy to bring some stuff back. And like I said, I'll be bringing some things back for the store, too. So if you just want to come check those out in a couple weeks, too.
I'm totally in it for the free samples. I'm sorry we've got to cut this short, but thank you for joining us here on Throwback Thursday,
always
talking about future fun here on WJBC.